I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is April 5th, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's subject, taken from the website of the Skeptic Dictionary, Q-Link. Q-Link pendants and bracelets are magical jewelry said to neutralize the harmful stress effects of electromagnetic fields from computers, cell phones, and other electronic devices. The makers and sellers of the Q-Link jewelry want you to believe that EMF is an invisible cause of stress and fatigue. These gizmos are magical because, according to their inventors, they don't use electronic components in a conventional electronic way. According to conventional electronics, these talismans should not neutralize anything except one's wallet. Ben Goldacre has seen the innards of a Q-Link pendant and reports it has a circuit board that isn't connected to anything, so it doesn't really make a circuit. It has 8 copper pads that are not connected to anything. Soldered to its center is a 0-ohm resistor that is not connected to anything. For those who are wondering what a 0-ohm resistor is, Goldacre explains, this is simply a resistor that has pretty much no resistance. In effect, a bit of wire in a tiny box. It might sound like an absurd component, but they're quite common in modern circuits because they can be used to bridge the gap between adjacent tracks on a circuit board with a standard-sized component. In short, 0-ohm resistor is the name of a piece of wire, not a description of an electronic part. The electronic components for the device can be bought for pennies. What powers these magical protectors? It is claimed that the wearer provides the power by energizing it somehow with mysterious body frequencies or from the heartbeat. These Q-Link doodads are worn by celebrities such as Oprah, Tony Robbins, Madonna, Cherie Blair, and numerous athletes. According to one seller of this gizmo, there are many satisfied customers who report such things as a wide range of benefits that have enhanced their quality of life. People have also reported a reduction in the effects from exposure to mobile phones, computers, air travel, and all forms of EMF. Many have experienced fewer headaches and an overall increase in energy levels. Others say they feel better with more mental clarity and focus, better sleep, and less anxiety. Several world-class athletes report that the Q-Link improves their mental focus and endurance, giving them a significant competitive edge. I stopped cutting and pasting from this ad when the webmaster started exaggerating and telling lies about scientific studies being done at Stanford University, University of California at Irvine, Imperial College London, University of Wollongong, Australia, and the University of Vienna's Institute of Cancer. It would be very difficult to do studies on this device, since, according to those hawking it, it works by a kind of energy that we don't know how to measure yet. Of course, it has something to do with quantum physics. The gizmo works by sympathetic resonance technology. These folks even have a trademark for their technology, SRT. It was developed after years of research into a new class of energies called subtle or fundamental energy. They claim that subtle energy refers to a physical energy, such as electromagnetic or acoustic, that is of such low intensity that we have no means of measuring it presently. It is a physical field of very low magnitude. In fact, you can't get much lower than the Q-Link folks have stooped. They don't need to connect any of the electronic parts of their device because they have programmed it with SRT, which might well be an energy in one of the 11 dimensions of string theory. We can't measure this or know anything about it, except that it provides permanent, optimum, life-giving frequencies for the human energy system and creates a field that filters out unwanted energies. How this is known about something that can't be measured is not explained. Are those who give testimonials about this product lying? Not necessarily. The power of suggestion may be all that is needed to release a few hormones in some folks that make them feel good, energized, or empowered. The power of bad logic can lead many folks to think there is a causal connection between their wearing a piece of plastic with some wire and anything good that happens later. There's also the resistance most people have to admitting they've done something foolish, like buying an expensive pendant that costs pennies to make and that supposedly will protect you from evil rays. That sounds like something only superstitious people would do, or people in comic books who know nothing about quantum physics and subtle energies. Of course, there is comfort in knowing that more than 300 professional golfers wear the Q-Link pendant to help them with their game. Maybe they were influenced by the fact that the Q-Link was named Best New Product at the 2005 Professional Golfers Association. For those who wish to feel especially energized, you can get a Q-Link for your pet. For those who are wondering why these people aren't in jail, see the Skeptic Dictionary website essay on Why Woo-Woo Wins. Personally, if I wanted to reduce stress and increase energy, I'd diet, exercise, meditate, and take up needlepoint. I'd also turn off my television and quit reading the newspaper. For the record, the Q-Link should not be confused with the Q-Ray. And now for the science segment. This story from February 12, 2009. The Neanderthal genome will unlock secrets of human evolution. The genetic code of Neanderthal man has been pieced together from DNA recovered from ancient fossils, providing insights into evolution that promise to reveal many of the genes that make us human. As Homo Neanderthalus is the closest evolutionary cousin of Homo sapiens that has ever existed, comparison between its genome and those of modern humans and chimpanzees will allow scientists to identify DNA sequences that are unique to our species. Many of these will explain human capabilities that are not shared by other animals, such as complex thought, language, and art. Studying the Neanderthals and studying the Neanderthal genome will tell us what makes us modern humans really human, why we are alone, why we have these amazing capabilities. It will allow us to analyze our genome and manipulate it. The reconstruction of the Neanderthal genome will not, however, pave the way for the resurrection of the ancient human relatives by cloning. While sufficient DNA can be recovered from fossils to allow a rough genome map to be assembled, this will be too incomplete to clone a living being. I would say that starting from DNA from a fossil, cloning remains impossible. As far as I can see into the future, there isn't an improvement in technology that would make that possible, said Professor Pabo. The announcement came on the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin. It is really about understanding our evolution, Professor Pabo said. We will be able to catalog the changes that happened before humans diverged from Neanderthals. Well, that's not correct. We didn't diverge from Neanderthals. Continuing, and those that happened afterwards. The second goal, which is fitting for Darwin's birthday, is finding evidence of positive selection, of identifying changes that really made a difference in our ancestors. The Neanderthal genome, which will be presented by Professor Pabo on Sunday at the American Association for the Advancement of Science conference in Chicago, is a first draft containing at least some data on 63% of the DNA letters that make it up. Nonetheless, it is a scientific tour de force that has greatly improved the ability to study the genetics of extinct species. While DNA from extinct creatures has been extracted and sequenced before, this has come from animals that were frozen in permafrost, mainly mammoths, and in which soft tissue had been preserved. The Neanderthal DNA, by contrast, was taken from bones found at four sites: Vindija in Croatia, El Cidron in Spain, Mezmaiskaya in Russia, and Feldhofer in the Neandar Valley in Germany, where the original specimens that gave the species its name were found. This DNA could be read because of new genome sequencing technology that has become available only in the past few years. The sequencing was conducted by 454 life sciences, which recently mapped the genetic code of James Watson, who with Francis Crick identified the double helix structure of DNA. Preliminary analysis of the Neanderthal genome has identified several critical genes that are similar or different to modern humans. Neanderthals do not appear to have the gene for lactase, which allows adults to digest milk, and is common among Europeans and some Africans, but rare elsewhere in the world. The research has also confirmed that Neanderthals share the human version of a gene called FOXP2, which is known to be involved in language, which suggests it is possible that they could have been capable of speech. This is the only gene we happen to know about that's involved in speech, and there will be many others, so we cannot say that they could speak. However, there is no reason to assume they couldn't speak from the little we know. How human were they? My take on that is that we will probably never fully know. Another early finding is that Neanderthals appear not to have interbred with modern humans. Our data show that the contribution of Neanderthals to the modern gene pool is very little, if any. Professor Chris Stringer, head of the Human Origins at the National History Museum in London, said, "If the Neanderthal genome data show little evidence of potential hybridization, that would fit with my view from the fossil evidence that while interbreeding was probably possible, it may have occurred only rarely, with trivial impact on modern humans." The populations had been separate for hundreds of thousands of years, and I think there would have been significant physical and behavioral differences between them. However, larger samples would be desirable to get a more complete picture, and hopefully those will follow soon. The research suggests that the evolutionary split between humans and Neanderthals happened about 830,000 years ago. The Neanderthals died out around 30,000 years ago, and competition with modern humans may have been an important factor. The first Neanderthal fossils were found in a limestone quarry in Germany in 1856, 3 years before Darwin's On the Origin of Species was published. The stocky, muscular human species was Homo sapiens' closest evolutionary relative, and at its peak dominated vast territory from Britain and Iberia in the west to Israel in the south and Uzbekistan in the east. Modern humans entered Europe 40,000 years ago. Within 10,000 years, Neanderthals had largely disappeared from the continent. Whether the two mated has been the subject of intense debate. Neanderthals' brains were about 10% larger than those of modern humans. Their squat physique helped to conserve heat in the Ice Age. And now the arena goes abroad. This story from February 11, 2009. The Vatican has admitted that Charles Darwin was on the right track when he claimed that man descended from apes. A leading official declared yesterday that Darwin's theory of evolution was compatible with Christian faith and could even be traced to St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas. In fact, what we mean by evolution is the world as created by God. The Vatican also dealt the final blow to speculation that Pope Benedict XVI might be prepared to endorse the theory of intelligent design, whose advocates credit a higher power for the complexities of life. Organizers of a papal-backed conference next month, marking the 150th anniversary of Darwin's publication of On the Origin of Species, said that at first it had even been proposed to ban intelligent design from the event as poor theology and poor science. Intelligent design would be discussed at the fringes of the conference at the Pontifical Gregorian University, but merely as a cultural phenomenon rather than as a scientific or theological issue. The conference is seen as a landmark in relations between faith and science. 3 years ago, advocates of intelligent design seized upon the Pope's reference to an intelligent project as proof that he favored their views. Conceding that the Church had been hostile to Darwin because of his theory appearing to conflict with the account of creation in Genesis, Archbishop Ravasi argued yesterday that biological evolution and the Christian view of creation were complementary. Mark Leclerc, who teaches natural philosophy at the Gregorian University, said that no scholar could remain indifferent to the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth. The Vatican would take the measure of an event which has left its mark forever on the history of science and has influenced the way we understand our humanity. The time has come for a rigorous and objective evaluation of Darwin by the Church. Professor Leclerc said that too many opponents of Darwin, above all creationists, had mistakenly claimed that his theories were totally incompatible with a religious vision of reality, as did proponents of intelligent design. Darwin's theories had never been formally condemned by the Roman Catholic Church. His rehabilitation had begun as long ago as 1950, when Pope Pius XII described evolution as a valid scientific approach to the development of humans. In 1996, John Paul II said that it was more than a hypothesis. Father Giuseppe Tanzella Nitti, professor of theology at the Pontifical Santa Croce University in Rome, said that Darwin had been anticipated by St. Augustine of Hippo. The 4th century theologian had never heard the term evolution, but knew that big fish eat smaller fish and that forms of life had been transformed slowly over time. Aquinas had made similar observations in the Middle Ages. He said it was time that theologians as well as scientists grappled with the mysteries of genetic codes and whether the diversification of life forms is the result of competition or cooperation between species. As for the origins of man, although we shared 97% of our genetic inheritance with apes, the remaining 3% is what makes us unique, including religion. I maintain that the idea of evolution has a place in Christian theology, Professor Nitti added. Creationism remains powerful in the U.S., however, notably among Protestants, and its followers object to evolution being taught in state schools. The Church of England is seeking to bring Darwin back into the fold with a page on its website paying tribute to his forgotten work in his local parish to illustrate how science and church need not be at odds. Several pages celebrate Darwin's significant scientific progress to mark his bicentenary and also the 150th anniversary of the publication of On the Origin of Species. The Church wants to correct the impression that Darwin's relationship with Anglicanism was contentious. The Anglican Church as a whole did not condemn Darwin or his beliefs. It says that although he lost his faith, he did not become anti-church or anti-religious. And for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Isaac Asimov, born 1920, died 1992 at the age of 72. He was a Russian-born American author and professor of biochemistry. Best known for his works of science fiction and for his popular science books. Most of Asimov's popularized science books explain scientific concepts in an historical way, going as far back as possible to a time when the science in question was at its simplest stage. He often provides nationalities, birth dates, and death dates for the scientists he mentions, as well as etymologies and pronunciation guides for the technical terms. Examples include his Guide to Science, the 3-volume set Understanding Physics, and Asimov's Chronology of Science and Discovery. And now for the quotes of Isaac Asimov. I have 3. First, properly read, the Bible is the most potent force for atheism ever conceived. His second quote, the most exciting phrase to hear in science, the one that heralds the most discoveries, is not Eureka, but that's funny. His third and final quote, I believe in evidence. I believe in observation, measurement, and reasoning, confirmed by independent observers. I'll believe anything, no matter how wild and ridiculous, if there is evidence for it. The wilder and more ridiculous something is, however, the firmer and more solid the evidence will have to be.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.